There's nothing like gaining a fresh perspective from experts who've seen it all and have the wisdom to prove it. With MasterClass, you can learn from the best to become your best. With plans starting at $10 a month, billed annually, you get unlimited access to over 200 plus classes taught by the world's best business leaders, writers, chefs, and more. With MasterClass, you get thousands of bite-sized lessons across 13 categories that can fit into even the busiest of schedules. And the classes really make a difference. 3 in 4 surveyed members feel inspired every time they watch MasterClass. And 83% of surveyed members have applied something they've learned from MasterClass to their lives. MasterClass always has great offers during the holidays, sometimes up to as much as 50% off. Head over to masterclass.com/audio for the current offer. That's up to 50% off at masterclass.com/audio. Masterclass.com/audio.
If you have a podcast and want to monetize it stress-free, you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. We'll host your podcast for free, and our experienced sales team brings in the advertisers and the revenue. Easy. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
Spotlight Connecticut with Morgan Cunningham on WTIC News Talk 1080.
And I guess that this week on Spotlight Connecticut, you'll be hearing a lot about Eastern Connecticut State University. If you were here just moments ago for the opening monologue, I talked about being there this week for President Ismaili's inauguration, which was yesterday on Friday. So that was a great opportunity to see kind of where Eastern's heading. But also a little earlier this week at Eastern, they had their Big Read program, and author Andrew Krivak was there to give a talk about his book, The Bear. I guess I just kind of rhymed there. I didn't intend that. But hey, you know, The Bear is a survivalist story that's set in the New England wilderness. It explores humanity's relationship with nature and much more, and we're going to dig into some of the bigger picture questions and themes that come out of this book this week, and I think that you'll be able to walk away learning something and or pondering something about life after our conversation. That's the goal. Andrew, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hi, Morgan. Thank you for the invitation. I'm doing very well.
How was the event the other night at Eastern?
It was really spectacular. Talking to people, being on stage, answering questions, and I mean, it's always special to talk about this novel because it is so close to me. But it's also really gratifying and interesting to hear people who've read it and read it very closely talk about it and wonder about it.
I'm not looking to spoil anything for anybody in the listening audience, people who may just now be for the first time hearing about The Bear. But I'm curious if you could give us a brief synopsis what this is all about and what people should know about the book without giving away any big ending or plots or anything like that.
Yeah, sure. It was curious to me at the in your intro that you talked about it as a survivalist novel in New England wilderness. But really, I was interested as a novelist. I'm increasingly interested in writing about nature. And for The Bear, it was the first chance that I took to step away from, you know, contemporary realist fiction and think about a way in which nature itself could be a character in a novel, the protagonist, the first actor, and rather than a passive setting through which human characters travel. And that was kind of a tall order for myself, and I was really thinking about a long distant future place where a father and his daughter were living close to the land because, you know, living in nature. So not survival so much as this is just the way that they would live day to day.
I see.
And I was out fishing one day in my place in New Hampshire, and I actually have been thinking a lot about, reading a lot about the Laurentide Ice Sheet, the last ice age. Less than 15,000 years ago, blink of an eye, 13,000, right where we are right now in New England, was under a 2-mile-high wall of ice as it retreated back to the Arctic. For context, the Arctic itself, North Pole, all that ice, is only 10,000 years old. And I thought, wow, it must have just been beautiful in that time when the first peoples who were following that ice sheet as it retreated north were living here. And then I wonder what it's going to be like for the last. And I got my oars out and I rowed up to my dock, shipped them in, and ran up to my desk, and I wrote that first line, the last two were a man and his daughter who lived in the shadow of the mountain they called the mountain that stands alone. So the idea that these would be the last two then set into motion an entire process as a novelist of how do I become authentic to that land, that time, that idea, not thinking about the extinction of the human race, but really paring down this this place where it's man, his daughter, and nature. So The Bear is a novel in which those three things literally and figuratively live out on the page.
Let me ask you this, Andrew. I saw a video of you, at least one, in which you're out in the wilderness. You're standing, you're kind of kneeling, rather, on ice in New Hampshire. And this is, from my understanding, where a lot of the inspiration from your book came. And I'm curious if you could elaborate on your experiences with nature and how they were kind of woven into the book you wrote.
Yeah, so currently my family and I, we spend a lot of time up in Jaffrey, New Hampshire, all year round. And Monadnock is the mountain that stands alone. That's a native word for the mountain that stands alone. But in geological terms, actually, a Monadnock with a small M is a strange mountain that sticks up literally out of nowhere. So, and I grew up in northeastern Pennsylvania on a dirt road in the Pocono Northeast, really outside, lots of fishing. My father and my older brothers hunted. I was always interested in nature. I've always been out in nature. I've slept in snow and, you know, I'm no survivalist, but I know what it's like to be cold and to do the things that are not very comfortable to do. So when my wife and I got this place in Jaffrey, New Hampshire, it was a real sort of return to me, not, you know, clearly not to Pennsylvania, but in this eastern stretch of land, there are many of the same smells, the same sounds, the seasons move in the same way. And so it was a homecoming for me as an older man, to the younger, to the boy I was growing up in Pennsylvania. Those, I can't describe it any other way. So being out on the ice, knowing how to be on the ice, when is the ice safe, when isn't it safe, thinking about the ways in which nature sweeps through its seasons and how it moves in a circular pattern but also carries on forward. I don't know if I'm answering your question, but that's the kind of place I really love to be. And now in my older age, get a chance to live there and be there all the time, every season.
I think that that's pretty clear. And Andrew, it would seem to me, by the way, I want to talk about some of the bigger picture themes, and we'll do that after the news at the bottom half of the hour. Now I'm just kind of talking about some of the mechanics, some of the inspiration for your book, The Bear. It would occur to me that you have so many of these experiences in nature. As you mentioned, the smells, the sights, the similarities between Pennsylvania and, say, New Hampshire, and how we're all one with nature. Sometimes when you're writing, it's tough to get all of that symbolism in, the descriptions, finding the right words. Was that a tough process for you?
It always is a tough process if your goal is to write well. But I think Morgan, that it, in many ways, what I've tried to achieve as a writer is less is more. So I love to write about work. I was taught how to work hard from my Slovak grandmother to my father to all the mentors around me. And that's not just, you know, on the land, but in academia as well. So much more of an accuracy of purpose. So I've taken that into my writing, and I love to write about work, and not to be so interior with my characters, but to have them look out at the world. What are they seeing around them? How are they interacting with it? What are they doing with it? How are they making, literally? You know, the Greek word for poetes, which is what poetry comes from, it means to make. So I've always tried to achieve that, hone that. And so when I sit down to write a story, for me, it's a constant rewriting and honing and making until I will literally not consider a sentence finished until I read it out loud and it sounds to me like I've made it to the best possible sentence I can. Then sentence by sentence, all of a sudden, years later, you have a novel, which is those sentences put together. And I hope, and my goal is within that as a writer, that those actions that I've woven into the novels, whether they're, you know, immediate actions that are not, you know, don't reflect interiorly, or if they're meant to be symbolic, I don't know yet. I just try to create the arc as best I can. And when you do that, I find that a great deal of symbolism rises out of less is more. You know, it's not the particular and the universal. They have a pretty intimate relationship when it's done right.
Andrew Krivoc, my guest on WTIC News Talk 1080, talking about his book, The Bear. He did a talk about it at Eastern Connecticut State University a few days ago. Earlier this week, Andrew, real quick, before we go into the break, how can people find the book and learn a little bit more about you?
You can go to your favorite bookstore. I'm a big fan and will champion the independent bookstores all over the earth, especially in this country and then in New England. There are plenty of really excellent ones. Right. Go to your independent bookstore. Do they have The Bear? If they don't, you can order it. It's easy to get, and it's on audiobook as well and ebook.
We are talking about The Bear with the author of The Bear himself, Andrew Krivoc, who recently gave a talk at Eastern Connecticut State University as part of their Big Read program. The book was selected for the program, and earlier this week he talked about it at Eastern's campus in Willimantic. And as I was talking about this book with somebody else on our station a little earlier this week in promoting this show, Andrew, they suggested the idea to me that, maybe this is a post-apocalyptic novel. But talking with you, I don't believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't believe that this book really is about the apocalypse. I mean, there's an end to this book, of course, but it doesn't seem to me that it's about survival in that sense.
That's right. Yeah, Morgan. The novel of The Bear is really about the arc of the story of humanity. And humanity ends, so it's, I'm not spoiling anything in the novel, but it's not about the end of the earth. It's not the end as we know it. And I tried purposely to make the surrounding nature and the surrounding environment very beautiful as well as I could. So this idea of a post-apocalyptic dystopia was something I really wanted to avoid. Actually, a reviewer in the Wall Street Journal called it, and I think I'm getting this right, called it a post-apocalyptic utopia.
Now that's different.
And you know, apocalypse just means, coming from Greek again, sorry, but it's my classic education, it just means the uncovering. And so the idea that because it's the end of humankind, again, I didn't set out to write a book about human extinction, doesn't necessarily mean that this is the end. It just means that the story of humanity is over in this novel. I've said before that the book is as much about what is unknown as what is known. And so we know right from the first three words that this is about the last two. So wanting to write that first line, but also not wanting it to be dystopic or post-apocalyptic or anything that the genre suggests is exactly what we would expect, you know, smoking buildings, nuclear fallout, all that stuff. I just wanted to avoid. And again, searching my imagination, how could I make that happen? So I hope that comes across in The Bear.
The bear in this story, is it supposed to be a sign or a symbol of optimism, of hope for the future?
I think so. I do think so. I mean, it's hard to say hope when you have the end of humanity, but
right.
I would imagine what I was, again, trying to achieve myself was to take the vertical top-down way in which we humans often think. You know, we're the best thinkers. We do everything the best, and everything below us takes second, third, fourth, all the way down seed. And to stretch it out and say, if you think about it, like all stories, we're on a horizontal continuum of our own existence. And so I think that the way in which The Bear unfolds is meant to kind of level the playing field. The bear himself is a vehicle for the way in which nature lets the girl, when she's the last person left on Earth, it's not a spoiler, that the bear is the communicator that nature has been watching. Nature has been taking care of humanity all this time, marking the story, recording the story, if you will, in the way that nature records all stories. And the bear is he's the journeyer. He journeys along with the girl and communicates with her in the way that she's surprised she can. But he says, listen, it's just, you know, this, it's almost like a veil has lifted. And she can understand now because she sees, she hears, and she acts. So is it a symbol of hope? I want to believe so. Hope as nature would see it, or as Earth would understand it, in all of the storylines that sweep through existence, honestly. So
This is pretty heavy stuff, Andrew.
Heavy stuff, man.
And I hope that we're not depressing anybody. As you mentioned, you know, this isn't supposed to be a story of sadness, even though you're talking about the end of mankind. But my question to you, or one of them, and I have a few about the themes in this book, is there a way for me or you, obviously this is not the end, we're not at the end of mankind, me and you, we're not the only people left on the planet. Is there anything else that we can learn at this point in our journey of mankind from this book, from the bear, and apply it to our current life?
Yeah, that's a, wow, what a great question, Morgan. I think that one thing I would hope comes out of the bear is what I've said before, is this way in which the girl, the man, and then the bear, when the bear becomes a character as a stand-in for nature, sees what's in front of them in the present moment. And so I wonder if you know, if people could see more of what's around them. I tend to think we, you know, we as humans are quite selfish, not to put too fine a point on it, but we do, we really think about ourselves and the way in which we need to get what we need to get.
It's true.
When we look out and see, not just see others as in people, but see other things and the way things work and the way there's a more of a balance than our own selfish needs require or want, I think that people will just act differently. And, you know, if we were all out for ourselves, wow, what kind of a game would that be? That would be crazy. And so, we avoid this craziness because we are humans. We do have a sense of doing something for others as well as doing for ourselves. And so is it possible that reading this short novel about the last two can get people to look out and think about the ways we act and what effects that has on the world of humans and the world of nature? I don't know, but maybe when I realized this is going to be about the last two, I had to be authentic to that story and how these things would shake out. And so I thought, well, if I do that, when I get to the end, then we'll see what kind of questions arise.
Is the reader supposed to have some sense of time with this book? In other words, our lives are so driven by the clock. Right. We just came back from a commercial break and it has a set time and I had to be out by a certain time and I had to come back at a certain time. We go to our 9-to-5 jobs and it begins at this time and it ends at 5 o'clock that time. And so when we have a life that we're living that is so run by the clock and the sun coming out and the sun going down, is there a sense of time and urgency perhaps in this book?
Very much so. And I had to be careful, not only just in the ways in which the man and the girl forage for the food they get, they use the bow and the arrow they make to get the fish and the rabbit snares to get the food. I had to also be careful about something as simple as time. You know, it's they mark time through the seasons. And I think that was probably not too long ago, and that's exactly how we marked time. I'm sure there was clocks, but, you know, rich people in cities had clocks, ships had clocks. But, you know, did the folks living up in the White Mountains in New Hampshire as late as the 19th century, did they have clocks? I don't know, maybe, but maybe not. So the seasons give us the great, you know, the great clock in the sky. And so it would be kind of interesting to think more about the ways in which that time is a wholly different time.
I've never considered that before when once upon a time, somebody who is going to be, I don't know, you know, what we would consider a farmer. Okay, the sun has to come up and they're going to stop farming, of course, when the land freezes and there's snow on the ground. I never really thought of it that way, but you're right.
The harvest moon. Why do you think it was there? To give them more light, to bring in the harvest, you know?
Andrew Krivak is my guest. I'm Morgan Cunningham on WTIC. He's the author of The Bear. If you're just joining us, Andrew, I think I cut you off. Sorry.
No, that's okay. Fine.
You know, Andrew, you were just at Eastern Connecticut State University this past week where you gave a talk about The Bear. They have their big read program, and this was the book that they chose for it. And then you went and spoke with a group of people who read it and wanted to learn more about your take on the book. But, you know, college kids and college professors, they always come up with wild questions, as do I. That's why I have the job I have. Was there anything that they asked you that took you by surprise or made you think a little bit differently about your own work?
Oh, gosh. I think my brain is still processing all the time at CSU and thinking about all the great questions. I have a question actually that I often ask people who are firing questions at me.
Okay.
And it lines up with what we have been talking about, I think, is who tells the story of the bear, or maybe what's telling the story of the bear? If I, as a writer, wanted to sit down and write that story, it occurred to me mid through it, who is that? If it's the last two people on Earth, is it some strange, objective, third-person point of view? Who tells the story of the bear?
Is Maybe it the bear?
I don't honestly have an answer for that question as the writer.
So you're leaving that up to the reader?
I am, and it does create an interesting conversation. I think it interests me because the idea that story will outlast us if there's an end to us. But I do believe story is not just a domain of humanity. I think that's what I'm trying to say. That somehow story exists in all the universe, the notion of story. So that if that's getting too heavy, well.
Andrew, we're continuing and wrapping up with some final thoughts on the bear. And technology comes to mind. We're living in a world, as I mentioned, I'm surrounded by my computer and my microphone and my mixer and my lights. I'm recording this on a video camera. There's technology all around us. I have two cell phones sitting next to me right here. So when you think about technology in the bear, what does the book comment on as far as what we need in life, the basics, the food, the air, the water, and what we have in our life today, the technology that more or less distracts us, takes us away?
There's nothing like gaining a fresh perspective from experts who've seen it all and have the wisdom to prove it. With Masterclass, you can learn from the best to become your best. With plans starting at $10 a month, billed annually, you get unlimited access to over 200 plus classes taught by the world's best business leaders, writers, chefs, and more. With Masterclass, you get thousands of bite-sized lessons across 13 categories that can fit into even the busiest of schedules. And the classes really make a difference. 3 in 4 surveyed members feel inspired every time they watch Masterclass, and 83% of surveyed members have applied something they've learned from Masterclass to their lives. Masterclass always has great offers during the holidays, sometimes up to as much as 50% off. Head over to masterclass.com/audio for the current offer. That's up to 50% off at masterclass.com/audio. masterclass.com/audio.
DSW's semi-annual sale is back. Take 50% off all clearance shoes in stores for a limited time. Literally every single clearance item at your designer shoe warehouse store is on sale right now. Sneakers, boots, dress shoes, if they're on the clearance racks, they're 50% off. So what are you waiting for? Don't sleep on these savings. Get to DSW ASAP. It's all or nothing, people. Shop the DSW semi-annual sale today.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here, wishing you a very happy half-off holiday, because right now, Mint Mobile is offering you the gift of 50% off unlimited. To be clear, that's half price, not half the service. And Mint is still premium unlimited wireless for a great price. So, that means a half day, yeah? Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes if network's busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Away from nature?
Yeah, that's a cool question. I think two things. On the positive, technology is always with us. We're always looking to do something better. For instance, in the bear, how do you make a better snowshoe? How do you make a better bow? Her father makes a great one, but when she's alone, she makes a pretty bad one, nearly starves as a result. So, technology is that constant human innovation. On the downside of it, I think if it becomes a way to be lazy, yeah, we stop looking past our phone and just stare at our phone and don't look at the beautiful sunrise or you know, what is that water doing? Wow, look at that ice. Look how blue that ice is on the lake. So I'm of two minds. I am fully immersed in technology. I use it as a writer. I write on a laptop, but you know, it's about the writing. I'm only a storyteller. I'm only a reader and a writer because I listen to my grandmother tell me stories about the old country. I cannot not remember a time when I did not listen to her tell stories. And I just was wondering, as I got older and older, what is it like? What was her experience like? What did she see and feel and incorporate into her imagination to have that come out of her? And so I've just been fascinated by that. Technologically, you know, I've written on legal pads. I learned how to type. My mother taught me how to type, and I now write exclusively on a laptop because I can actually type faster than I can think. And so that's what I've got to do. But I will also just do what I call the research of contemplation. Just think through a problem in a novel. How do I get this paragraph to go from the beginning to the end and say what it is I want to say? That's just sitting down and with a, you know, again, a pencil and paper and your imagination. So I think technology is something that we should all embrace, but we should also realize that we are, you know, we're the humans looking out at the world. We do have an active role in this.
Andrew, what's next for you? Are you writing another book? Are you focusing on sharing this book with others? Like now you're talking about it in our interview. What's next for you?
Yeah, well, for context, the bear was launched in 2020, February 2020, 2 weeks before the world shut down for COVID. And I had finished it a year and a half prior. So it's been over 6 years now since I've written The Bear. I had a novel after that one in 2023. And I actually do have a new novel coming out in February 2026. So thanks, Morgan, for the chance to pitch that.
Well, look at you. You're just a rock star with books.
Look, well, it's the only gig I've got, man. It's what I do.
So, well, we might have another conversation about your book when it comes out.
Yeah, I mean, well, so just quickly, both my grandfathers died in the coal mines, and I've always wondered about when my father's father died in a cave-in, and I've wondered about that moment of death inside the mines. So it sounds pretty heavy, and it sounds really dark, but it's the story of a mule boy, a young boy who's caught in a cave-in with four miners. They die, he gets out, but he has to carry with them what they tell him in those final days, hours, moments.
And so you know what's weird? That bumper song I played a little while ago was a West Virginian musician, Hazel Dickens, so this is just too weird for me.
Yeah, Hazel Dickens is fantastic.
Yes, she is. That was who we played a little while ago on the show. But, you know, I hate to cut this short here, Andrew, but I'm fascinated by just that little synopsis you gave, and I think I'll have to have you back when that launches.
I would love to, Morgan. I appreciate that.
But in the meantime, how can people find The Bear?
The Bear, again, your favorite bookstore, especially if it's an independent bookstore, but you can find it anywhere where they sell books, online, in a store, audiobook or ebook.
Spotlight Connecticut with Morgan Cunningham on WTIC News Talk 1080.
There's nothing like gaining a fresh perspective from experts who've seen it all and have the wisdom to prove it. With Masterclass, you can learn from the best to become your best. With plans starting at $10 a month, billed annually, you get unlimited access to over 200 plus classes taught by the world's best business leaders, writers, chefs, and more. With Masterclass, you get thousands of bite-sized lessons across 13 categories that can fit into even the busiest of schedules. And the classes really make a difference. 3 in 4 surveyed members feel inspired every time they watch Masterclass. And 83% of surveyed members have applied something they've learned from Masterclass to their lives. Masterclass always has great offers during the holidays, sometimes up to as much as 50% off. Head over to masterclass.com/audio for the current offer. That's up to 50% off at masterclass.com/audio. Masterclass.com/audio.
If you have a podcast and want to monetize it stress-free, you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. We'll host your podcast for free, and our experienced sales team brings in the advertisers and the revenue. Easy. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.